The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Sparkling water, lemon, osmosis, carbonated, filtered, distilled, see, in trouble.
You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. I am your super waterman, ambassador for water, here at Pittsfield Community Radio 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR in Lee, bringing you the water conversation from here to all
in
around
the
world.
Abundance of water.
Super psyched to be with you.
The food.
I have Hari Kumar. We'll be talking a little bit about this upcoming AI fest and what there is to either do about it or learn about it. Super psyched about that. And we'll be bringing on some water music along the way, so stay on tune. You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. I'm your super waterman, ambassador for water. We're going to start off with a little bit of music coming to you from Everclear, and this is Santa Monica.
Still living with your ghost, lonely and dreaming of the West Coast. I don't want to be your downtown. I don't want to be your stupid game with my big black boots and an old suitcase. I do believe I'll find myself a new.
Watch the world die. You never take advice. Someday you'll pay the price. I know. I've seen it before. It happens all the time. You're closing the door. You leave the world behind. You're digging for gold. You're throwing away a fortune and feeling. But someday you'll pay.
Is Ice by Foreigner. That'll be a segue into our news story today, but you just hold on. You just inquire into what I mean by that. Before that, I had Throw Me a Line with Water on the Moon, and that is from I Am Eve, a.k.a. Tiff Randall. She's a cult following person. She loves water as well. And we started off the show with Santa Monica by Everclear and watching the world burn behind us and getting out on those jetties to kind of leave the burning world behind. You know, maybe it's time to, like, turn around and see what we could do to help. You know, maybe enough of it has turned into rubble already that we have to, like, now, oh, gosh, what have we done? And you're listening to And So It Flows, the only show for H2O. Super psyched. I'll be on with Hari Kumar. He's coming on very soon. Super psyched about that. We'll have a conversation regarding AI, but our water news today is ice related. And let me get a bit of it for you today. And this is coming from Truth Out. It's an op-ed, a War and Peace op-ed, and the title is Ice is Functioning Like an Occupying Army. I know because I served in one, and this is by Rory Fanning, who is a veteran in a couple of the most recent wars. He's leading protests against Trump's National Guard deployments, encourage soldiers to resist Trump's illegal orders. And in the meantime, you have this on From Truth Out, published November 12, 2025. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, helicopters will undoubtedly be circling my neighborhood looking for roofers and landscapers this Veterans Day, just as they have been for weeks. In U.S., you are an easy mark when you have brown skin and your job demands that you labor out in the open. My town, located just outside of Chicago, has been crawling with ICE agents or soldiers. The terms deserve to be used interchangeably for weeks now. Recently, two moms in the cold with their whistles helped guard a crew working on a roof that was damaged by hail in a recent storm. The ICE agents and soldiers, dressed in full military kit, carrying semi-automatic weapons and wearing ski masks to hide their identity, are patrolling in unmarked trucks, and I think we all know how to spot them at this point. These people remind us of the soldiers I patrolled with in Afghanistan. Only the average ICE agent has less training than an average soldier. It seemed like every neighborhood in the U.S. is now subject to an armed and potentially violent confrontation with federal troops. The U.S. occupation of Iraq and Afghanistan, a little bit of a pause there as I get back to, has come full circle. Similar to the way that I terrorized Afghan villages, says Rory, during my time in the military following 9/11, ICE has been terrorizing my town. When I was in the U.S. Army Rangers, we'd target high school and college-age Afghans. Most of the time, these kids were simply walking down the street, minding their own business, when they became subject to the search and intimidating interrogation or abduction. After a while, Afghans would alert their neighbors anytime our caravan of trucks entered a town. Sometimes they would use whistles, and villagers would quickly disappear, and it felt then like we were rolling through a ghost town. This is part of life under occupation. There's more to that story. You got to go to Truth Out. Look up Rory Fanning. That's R-O-R-Y. Fanning, and go to Truth Out. You can Google that and find the rest of that article. You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O.
The journey is complete.
Is this the Dragon Well?
Yes. I stood here with my father when I was your age. He told me it's a magic kung fu water. You drink and nothing can defeat you.
I've ever tasted.
The mice ran up the clock. The clock struck one, but the other one got off with minor injuries.
Boil them cabbage down, down, turn them old pigs brown. The only song that I can sing is boil them cabbage down.
butcher. He really is a jerk. He backed into the grinder and got a little behind in his work.
Boiling cabbage, down, down, turn him old cakes brown. The only song that I can sing is boiling cabbage down. Boiling cabbage, down, down, turn him old cakes brown. The only song that I can sing is boiling cabbages down.
We're going to boil some of those cabbages down today here and at So It Flows, your only show for H2O. I am your Super Waterman, Ambassador for Water, here with today Hari Kumar. Hari is, you say Hari. Hari, I met recently, and you work up at Williams College. You're part of the academic staff. And then you're also professing some things, which I think is really interesting. Why don't you share a little bit about who you are to all your water-loving listeners and seers around the world?
On the show, my name is Hari Kumar. I have a small business called Convivo. I teach classes on communication skills, like public speaking, storytelling, presentation skills, and so on. I'm also a visiting professor at Williams for this semester. And more recently, what I've been doing is, separate from those two things, I've been doing a series of webinars to try to educate people around the costs of AI and try to help people take a more informed stand against all the hype around these AI products.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's super important. And I want to parse a few things. So not right go directly into the subject matter, but just kind of having fun around the whole game of the visiting professor. What does that actually mean? And when you visit, do you bring like cookies or wine or cheese or like what?
That's
flowers?
A great, I probably should. I think students would like me a lot more if I did that.
How, what is a visiting professor? I don't understand what that is.
Oh, it's just a temporary short-term appointment. I'm really just covering for a professor who is sadly away on an emergency situation. And so I'm covering for a couple of our classes.
Wow.
And so that's typically what a visiting professor does.
Wow.
Is often covers for a professor that has to be away.
Got you. I understand. And now, for those of you who are not from the region, this Berkshire County, people here know in our Berkshire County bubble what is Williams College. But for those who aren't familiar, why don't you say a little bit about Williams College and what that represents in the world of academia anyway?
Oh, certainly. Yeah. So Williams College is a small liberal arts college right here in Berkshire County. So it's a 4-year college. And it's one of the top liberal arts colleges in the country, and offers a lot of different majors, but really specializes in a small, college. I think it's about 1,400, 1,500 students or so. And so people get to have just a really small, tight-knit college education.
It really is. I find it to be just an incredible little concentrated bubble of academic community. There's a lot of thinking. There's a lot of, it's highly endowed, meaning not, in any kind of scatological language, but really more like in the world of there are resources available for folks who want to make a difference in the world of thinking or any kind of cultural level thing.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, it's such a difference from my own background is that, I went to college to be an engineer. So my whole entire college education was all just in science and technology and engineering. And it was only after I worked as an engineer that I realized, wait, there's a whole social world that I don't know anything about. And so I left engineering to go back and get a second master's in communication and learned all about, things like race, gender, sexuality, politics, things that engineers don't have formula for. And I think that's the value of like a liberal arts education, which is that you don't have to do what I did. Students at colleges like Williams get to take classes every semester that is across the board. Students can take a class on science, in the morning and take a dance class in the afternoon and go play in a musical concert in the evening and take a class on music and nationalism the next day.
Yeah, it allows for lots of people to experiment with what they want in life. And there's definitely value in that.
Yeah.
And then there's also definitely a value of going to a smaller school and you have a feeling that you can make a bigger impact. So shout out to the Williams College community here in Berkshire County. You're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. And we are here at Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM, 88.1 WSBR in Lee. Anywhere on your podcast platforms, you could find us and just be part of the water conversation here and around the world. So getting back to you, Harry, what about AI? I mean, I got to fess up. I mean, I use AI. I use it for a variety of reasons, and I'll give you a couple.
Mm-hmm.
I use it for rendering imagery.
Mm-hmm.
I use it to cut up videos into little bits.
Mm-hmm.
I use it to help jog some ideas that might already be there and might want to be further adapted. And I do. I use it. So I'm both interested in AI, and I'm also interested in not destroying the very planet in which I live. So you got me. What do you say to folks to kind of lead them in into the conversation if they're already in a modern techno world?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, and I'll say I'm a technologist myself. You know, I'm a former engineer. I use technology quite a lot. And I certainly understand, you know, everyday people like you and me who see these products and see how they're marketed and are simply looking to use them as intended and as marketed.
Mm-hmm.
And initially, it might sound like these things are actually pretty cool and pretty useful. You know, I think a lot of the times people think, oh, you know, the way these things work is they've been trained on all the information in the world. And so these things just know a lot. And so, hey, I can ask it anything. It's a general purpose tool. I can ask it anything. It'll give me a pretty good answer. And that's it really seems appealing. But then when you begin to understand, actually, wait, how do these things actually work? What do they actually do?
How do they actually work? This is, we're just really parsing this. This is something.
Yeah.
We are not going to be talking here all day, so I don't know how can we boil this cabbage down like the last song that was just played,
mm-hmm.
in a way that people could take away like, oh, this is what it does, and what can I do?
Yeah.
So what does it, like, what are the things that you're pointing at that might be red flags, you know, very, very briskly waving yellow flags?
Right.
Like, yeah. What are those things?
Yeah. And so I think a lot of people probably by now know a little bit or might have heard that, you know, AI has a lot of environmental impact, and they might not really know just how much of an impact that is. And it's like how much, especially on water, which is what the purpose of the show is, right?
I have heard. So I'm thinking that every time I'm making an image, I'm using a cup of water. I'm not sure if that's correct or not. I'm just thinking that maybe there's an impact. So do you have any stats on this?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, there have been some really good studies that have come out just over the past year or so. One of them, the one that's most commonly cited is out of UC Riverside, but also MIT Technology Review did a good study on just the energy use, the electricity use of generative AI products. And so a good rule of thumb is that if you're using ChatGPT, say, right, for a very typical interaction that might take, say, 15 minutes to a half an hour, which is, say, you're asking it about 10 questions or so, and then you decide to have it generate a flyer for you, and maybe as part of generating that flyer, you make it generate an image for you. Very, very typical use case, about 15, 20 minutes. Well, the studies show that that really simple use can take up to a full bottle of water. So I've got a 18-ounce bottle of water over here.
So 15 minutes.
Of using ChatGPT.
32 ounces, what, 24
About 18 ounces, over
18
here.
18 ounces.
Yeah. And these studies were done using estimates of how large ChatGPT was with ChatGPT 3. Now, OpenAI has stopped releasing any information about how large ChatGPT 4 or 5 are. Estimates are that ChatGPT 4 is at least about 10 times larger than ChatGPT 3.
Wow.
And ChatGPT 5 might be about 20 times
By
larger.
By larger, you mean takes more space?
Yeah, it takes more space, takes more computational energy, and so it will then take more heat it will take more water to cool down the servers.
Wow.
So it's possible that these estimates are actually on the conservative
side. Okay, so let's step back a second, because I have a point of view that is that each of us contribute to something larger.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it could be in a variety of different ways. You know, in a good way, it's like if we all chip in a little bit, we could fix a problem without too much effort.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the part of the 18-ounce bottle of water.
Mm-hmm.
When you have that 18-ounce bottle of water, what's the impact for, let's say, do you have it on a company-wide level of what this one tool is using overall through all its usage? Can you speak granularly company by company or only industry wide?
Well, you can just expand it from there. If just one person using ChatGPT for 15 to 30 minutes takes up about a bottle of water,
okay,
right? And you've got, say, you know, 200 people in a company using it 8 hours a day, that's a lot of water being wasted.
So that's, is that people in your, so if you have 200 people using it, okay, and then if we could take that society-wide, mm-hmm. and how many people, do we know how many people are using generative AI products right now here in the United States? Any clues?
Yeah, it's in the hundreds of millions. OpenAI claims that they have about 700 to 800 million users of ChatGPT a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that may be a little inflated, but clearly these AI products are now very prevalent. A lot of people are using them. A lot of folks are using them without even knowing, because, for example, if you search anything on Google these days, you get an AI overview. And that's using a generative AI product behind the scenes called Google Gemini that tries to summarize an answer for you, by which it doesn't actually summarize it. It generates a probabilistic answer-shaped object.
I started using Gemini as well. Okay. So, yeah, I'm a serial user of this stuff. My thought is, what can people do, like, what can they do besides perhaps wean themselves off of the new thing that they like?
Yeah.
Or what else? What other thoughts are there in this world? And we don't even have to go there directly. There's an AI data center being built, I believe, near Westfield, Massachusetts, or mm-hmm. in the planning stages, or being built right now. What would an impact be if we could visualize, okay, so
mm-hmm.
you have multiple cups of water from thousands of people using it. Let's do a little calculation.
Mm-hmm. It's millions of gallons of water a year that go into this, and a lot of it, yeah.
Wow.
Just for one data center. And a lot of that.
Is there a specific stat that you could point to that says for this data center, it's this much? Do you have that fact with you at all?
It depends on the size of the data center and the type of the data center. So we're talking about AI data centers, and it depends on how large the data center is in terms of its electricity use. So
what's the average data center size? Do you know that?
Yeah. So until about a few years ago, AI or regular data centers you know, would max out at maybe about 100 or so megawatts. That would be considered a large data center.
How much land would that take to build a 100-watt data center?
100-megawatt data center? I don't know that off the top of my head, but okay. The newer, the AI data centers start at 100 megawatts and go up from there. So a typical AI data center now, a mid-sized data center, would be about 300 megawatts. By the way, 300 megawatts of electricity is enough electricity to power all the houses in the city of Cincinnati or the city of St. Louis.
So you're talking, okay, so let's say Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Cincinnati. Pretty big city.
Yeah.
And you're saying a 300 megawatt data center, which is the current standard.
Yeah.
Would give enough electricity for all of the houses in Cincinnati to have electricity for a full year. Okay. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
So that's one data center.
That's one data center. Yeah.
So then if, let's say, that 300 megawatts is going to a huge surge in demand in your region.
Yeah.
Then they're gonna...
Your electricity prices are going up through the roof.
Or being throttled.
Yeah. So people are already seeing this. When an AI data center comes into your neighborhood, the electricity company suddenly is experiencing a lot of demand for electricity. And so when they have a lot of demand, they hike up the prices. And the people that end up paying those prices are you and me. Everyday folks that have to live near that data center.
Either near or within, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That is, one of the things I'm really interested to kind of get granular, and I hope you could get back to me and maybe we could do a deeper story into this. When did you start becoming interested in the subject matter? Like, what had you say, we got to look at this?
Well, I've been following this pretty closely for about 3 years now, ever since the first ChatGPT came out. As an engineer myself, this is something that, it's on my peripheral attention. But when it first came out, I thought, oh, yeah, this is kind of an interesting tool. Let me go ahead and play with it and try it out. And I tried it out and I was like, huh, this is kind of strange. It gives me a different answer each time I ask do something.
It's right? Actually lying half the time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's making stuff up.
Yeah, it is.
And you have to check the data twice.
And if you ask it to not do that, it doesn't know how not to do that. So that was a surprise for me, was realizing, wait a second, this thing actually does not know whether something is accurate or correct or not. It doesn't care. It doesn't even know that it's making stuff up.
I think that's really quite human, though, on one level.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, it's the part of us that maybe that we are making things up. And if we are making things up, why are we making things up that are abusing us and causing us pain and suffering? So I look at that in the realm of language, if you want to go there, like all the times we use our language to say, we're not good, you're not good, you're not right, that's not right.
Yeah.
That's also part of, and we really don't know. I call it, the box of rocks syndrome. And what I mean by that, there's a guy coming off the train and he sees someone at the top of the subway, New York, subway steps, and he's selling this $5 box, which has a picture of a video recorder. And he's like, whoa, I want that. So he takes the video recorder. He starts telling everybody how he bought this video recorder. And he gets home and he tells his wife, it's like, I got this video. Look at this box. It's all heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Big, heavy box. And his wife says, okay, cool. Let's open it. And rips it open. And his jaw widens. His eyes droop. And he starts to say, oh, my God. And he turns it over, and it's a bunch of rocks in the box. Well, he thought he had this really cool GoPro video recorder. All he had was a box of rocks.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I speak to, the box of rocks. And I think on some level, all of us do that. So I find AI doing it is like, of course, or, you know, just like humans do. And we make stuff up.
Well, this is actually what got me to leave engineering in the first place, to go study how we use language. And so that's why I went to study communication and, you know, try to learn about how we use language to be persuaded of all kinds of things. So how do we use stories to persuade each other? How do we use, you know, body language? How do we perform our identities in everyday life?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a way in which when we say language, it's we're actually trying to communicate with one another. And so when we see language, when we see text, we actually want to imagine that there's a mind behind the text. There you go, hydrate. Yeah. But what these generative AI products do, though, they're not actually trained on language. It turns out it's a bit of a misnomer to say that they are large language models. And here I want to credit Emily Bender. She's a computational linguist at the University of Washington, Seattle. And she's done a lot of really good work on really understanding and helping people understand what these things actually do, how they actually work. And the point she makes is that these large language models, they're not actually trained on language. They're trained to imitate patterns of text. And text is just words. Words aren't language. You know, but when we see words, we want to imagine that there's a mind that's behind those words that's trying to communicate with us. And so these large language models...
While it's drinking a whole bunch of water.
That's right. So all it's really doing is it's generating probabilistically the next word in a sequence of words that we might like. We might think of it as an answer-shaped object because we want to imagine that there's a mind behind it, but there isn't. There's just a computation engine that's just trying to predict the next word that will make us happy.
So, wow.
Yeah, and it's why people get kind of addicted to these things.
So you're saying it's a dopamine rush delivery system.
Absolutely. We've seen this playbook before. These big tech companies, they know how to make addictive software products and addictive technologies. You know, phones, social media, we're wired to like the little dopamine hit from the likes and the clicks and the
oh,
the views.
Yeah. The feeling like someone's paying attention to our perspective, and it's really nice to have someone care about.
Yeah. So you imagine like, you know, the hit that you get in your social media feed, you're scrolling through Facebook or you're scrolling through TikTok or, you know, and you see a bunch of things that just reaffirm the way you see the world. But now imagine that, you know, you take away the inconvenience of the algorithm having to find somebody who says what you like. It'll just say what you like right back to you.
Yeah. Here's the place I go with this, you know, and specifically it's in the world of patterns, and I really am interested in the world of the environmental impact for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And there definitely wants to be something to be said about if we're going to be addicted to sugar, it shouldn't kill us,
right?
You know, so the game I would think is in the game of patterns of previously thought about prophecies of things to come.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's on point and sometimes it's not. It's like mm-hmm. that broken clock, you know,
right.
Twice a day. It's going to naturally sometime be right and sometime be wrong. And I look at, like, there's the Y2K that happened in the year 2000. There's, you know, cults or organizations that dedicate to themselves to, you know, groupthink.
Sure.
And they think at the end of the day, everything's going to end.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're wrong. And it didn't end. And I think part of that is going to be worked out in this process of, like, what are we doing here? I think the part which is super important is a conversation regarding it.
Yeah.
Like, what that means, if you have an addiction to a thing that if through how many people will it take to have that data center suck up enough energy to give light to a city? Like, how many people does that take to do something like that?
Yeah.
So that's my question. Is there a number on that? Like, how many, in the current state of affairs, how many people have to be logged on to a thing to have it have that amount of energy use?
Yeah. I mean, the good news is it doesn't take all that many people. It takes just enough to be aware and to...
No, that's not the question. The question I thought is... how many people does it take to use up those 300 megawatts?
Oh, about 100,000 households, right? So about 500,000 people.
Would have to be using AI to have the use of 300 megawatts? Or are you talking about the house?
Yeah, 300 megawatts is enough electricity for 500,000 people to use.
Million people. My question then was, is there any data on how many people have to be using AI, let's say, to have that same pull?
Well, it's a lot less than that, because these 300 megawatts, right, what goes on in an AI data center, it's not like, it's way more, I'll give you an example. So something just came out. So Sora, which is a new video generation engine that OpenAI released, right, creates 15-second videos. So creating one 15-second video takes up about as much energy as running a microwave on high for an hour, right?
Well, so that's one video.
Yeah.
And let's say you make 100 slop videos.
Yeah. Yeah, you've just run a microwave on high.
And you multiply that by... a million, let's say, because a million users, let's say, that, which is a very, very conservative estimate.
Yeah.
That would be 1 million 15-second videos.
Yeah.
And 1 million microwaves
running on high,
For
an hour.
For an hour.
Yeah.
That's for a video.
For a silly video.
Wow. Right?
So that's nowhere equivalent to a million actual people using a microwave. It's a lot. So it doesn't take that many people using AI to equal the amount of electricity that 500,000 people could be using for, like, everyday household use.
Yeah.
So it's
and is everyday household use now going to include AI? And,
right,
you know, this it's not only deep, but it's also... what does a person do when they find that they like something and they then have to either self-correct? And I'm thinking is, let science out of the box and being able to learn how to be with the, like, having a thing that we like not kill us.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I would say is, it'd be one thing if this thing actually worked. Right. If this thing actually did the things that they claim it does, that'd be one thing. We would still have to figure out, like, is that worth the environmental cost? Right. But it turns out this thing actually doesn't do what they claim it does. And so when we end up liking this thing and then we realize, wait a second, this thing is, it's not reliable.
What are some of the things I could tell you what I heard about, you know, in the whole world of getting into the world of tech and computers is going to make your life simple.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody with half of phone networks knows that apps and technology haven't kept that promise.
That's right. In fact, they made things more complicated.
Yeah, for sure.
We're already seeing that. It's one reason why an MIT study that came out over the summer found that 95% of companies that have tried to adopt AI are finding zero return on their investment from actually spending billions of dollars trying to adopt AI.
Oops, because
Well, because one of the reasons is because when you, these things are not reliable, but when you try to use it at work and it generates what it looks like a pretty nice report and you send the report on to your coworker, your coworker now reads this report, or your manager reads the report, and they realize, wait a second, this report doesn't make any sense. It's not really a report. It's a report-shaped object. And then somebody else has to go fix all the errors. So it creates something called AI work slop. And so this AI work slop is actually hurting productivity, not improving productivity. Because
is there a place that that has been seen or spoken to directly? And one second, for those of you who are just tuning in, you're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. I am Leslie, your Super Waterman Ambassador for Water, and I'm here with Hari Kumar, and we're having a conversation regarding AI. So in the world of work slop, have you ever encountered it yourself in your work? Like people come to you and say, oh, but I have a report, or, oh, I have this thing, and you see it and it's just like that.
Oh, absolutely. I'll give you a couple of examples, but there's also been a study that came out from Stanford that looked deeper into this phenomenon of work slop, and they found that like 80% of people have been impacted by work slop. Some coworker has given them an email or a report or a slide, and they're like, wait a second, there's... So an example I'll give you is that I was recently, you know, in charge of a search process for hiring, you know, another person. And we asked a consultant to give us some tips on how they go about doing a search. Well, this consultant sent us a very nice report on how they would do a search. And on paper, it looked pretty nice. And then we actually began reading through it. We're like, wait a second, there's just a bunch of generic, banal paragraphs here that you or I could have written. I'm not a search expert, you know, on how to search for a candidate. But all of these things, these very, very nicely formatted paragraphs, aren't actually saying anything. And I'm like, but we expected this consultant. This is a consultant who has 40 years of experience.
Oh, yeah. And he makes a presentation that's bunky.
Yeah. It's really, really bland, shallow, you know, very generic. We didn't get a sense as to what is this person's expertise? What actual examples are they giving us? So that's a real example where it wasted our time. We had to look through this guy's, you know, this person's, you know, report. And we ended up not hiring this consultant. Mm-hmm. So that's an example of somebody who lost a gig because they used a generative AI thing to create a plausible looking report.
Yeah, that, I mean, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I've had some experience of it being like not that. But, and where I want to focus on is the 1 million plugged in microwaves.
Yeah.
And what does that do? Because there's this rush to fix the thing around why do we need technology in the first place?
Yeah.
Life is fine. And then there's technology. So the game is, can we have it be a generative experience, not just in the AI sense? Mm-hmm. So if you're being generative AI... Mm-hmm. And then you're sucking up the power for 1 million, not toaster ovens, but microwave ovens, for an hour.
Yeah.
For one, and trading that for 15 million 15-second slop
silly
videos.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's something off in that, because then it's not generative.
Yeah. It's degenerative. This is
exactly. You're sucking up the goodness of the water in order to give the AI. Now, I did follow some of the process, and we got like a couple minutes here. I thought that was one of the things around DeepSeek, the Chinese AI model, that they found some kind of more eco-friendly way of doing the AI. And I'm not sure about that, truly. I just know that they use a different kind of generation for the energy, and it's much less impactful. And I don't know if that's correct or not.
No.
So I'm going to kind of put it out there as something to look further into. And I do want to dive in deeper around this. And this is a great subject matter. And really, let's look at these 1 million plugged in microwaves. And the water that it needs to have that 1 million
to cool that down
microwaves for an hour. That's a lot of hours of microwaving. Food better be good in a microwave. So my thought is, how can people find out more about either your webinars or come listen to a talk that you have on this subject matter?
Yeah. I have a few more videos on this where I go into a little bit more depth on exactly what's going on here. People can go to my website, which is connectconvivo.com. Again, that's connect as in connection. Convivo, C-O-N-V-I-V-O. Convivo as in convivial, with joy.
Yeah.
Connectconvivo.com.
Or with life.
With life, exactly.
Yeah, with life itself. Convivo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So and connect with life. Connectconvivo.com.
Yeah.
And you'll see a couple of the videos that I've put up there. One video gets deeper into the environmental impact of AI, as well as the technological problems. Like, why do these things actually not work? Why do they actually, why are they not reliable? You know, why do they give you a different answer each time you ask the same question? I get into that in the first video.
Why do we need a different answer each time? That's a good thing. And there's a whole other game around that, but I'm not here to do an AI.
Sure.
This is how you use it fest. And we're listening to And So It Flows, your only show for H2O. I'm super psyched to be with you. Just had a conversation with Hari Kumar talking about the incredible impact of AI upon water. But back when there was no AI in everybody's brain, there was this really cool song called The Yellow Submarine.
Mm-hmm. In the town where I was born, lived a man who sailed to sea, and he told us of his life in the land of submarines. So we sailed unto the sun till we found the sea of green, and we lived beneath the waves in our yellow submarine.
Super psyched that you were with me today and with all of us, all our water-loving fans all around the world, coming straight from the Berkshires and bringing in that water culture to every spot. Just had the Yellow Submarines, the Beatles. Check us out on all your podcast platforms. Super psyched. Have a little holiday coming up, so stay on tune because it is very close to Thanksgiving. And be well, and let's see what we got going on soon.
The mouth is the water, sparkling water, lemon, osmosis, carbonated, filtered, distilled. See, in trouble. Water.
in the abundance of water, the fool will get thirsty.